What? Baudelaire. We are not flowers to be plucked and shielded, Captain. We are flowers who flourish in evil. Chapter 19. Charlie. May 1947. Four gin martinis sent Eve straight from supper to bed, but I was still restless. Too tired to go for a walk. The little problem drank my energy down like hot chocolate. I hoped that part of being pregnant would go away soon. But tired or not, I wasn't ready to go up to my room. Then Finn pushed back his chair from the table, pocketing the bullets Eve had given him from the Luger.
"I've got some work to do on the car. Come hold the torch."
It had showered while we were eating, so the night was warm and rain-scented. The pavement gleamed under the street lamps, and cars passed by with a swish of wet tires. Finn rummaged in the car's trunk, came out with a flashlight and a toolbox.
"Keep it steady,"
he said, handing me the flashlight and popping the hood. "What's wrong with the old girl now?" I asked. Finn reached down into the Lagonda's innards.
"Got an old leak somewhere. I tighten things up every few days. Make sure it doesn't get worse."
I stood on tiptoe, aiming the flashlight's beam as a cluster of giggling French girls blew past. "Wouldn't it be easier to find the leak and fix it?"
"You want me to take the time to break down the ruddy engine and put it back together?"
"Not really." As pleasant as today's drive had been, the warm sunshine and the new camaraderie being woven among the three of us, I was on fire to get to Limoges. Rose. The closer I got to the last place she'd been, the more the hope burned in me that she really might be alive and waiting for me. And once it was Rose and me again, arm in arm against the world, I could do anything.
"Come on,"
Finn muttered to a stubborn lugnut or screwhead or whatever it was. His Scots burr got sicker, as it always did when he was trying to persuade the car to cooperate.
"Rusty old bitch."
He worked away with a wrench back and forth.
"Hold that torch a bit higher, miss."
"Finn, if you call me miss now, you'll blow my cover. As spies, like Eve would say." I tapped my fake wedding ring. "I'm Mrs. Donald McGowan, remember?" He got the bolt to loosen or tighten or whatever.
"Grand idea, that ring."
"I need a picture of my Donald," I mused. "Something I can look at mistily when I say that my heart is in the grave."
"Donald would want you to go on with your life," Finn said. "You're young. He'd tell you to marry again."
"I don't want to get married. I want to find Rose and then maybe run a cafe."
"A cafe?"
Finn looked up from Lagonda's innards, a lock of hair falling over his eyes.
"Why?"
"The happiest day in my life was spent with Rose at a French cafe. I thought maybe, if I find her... It's an idea, anyway. I have to do something with my future." Now that I had the little problem to think about, I needed a new plan besides my mother's old one of get bees at Bennington until you can hook a nice young lawyer. Strangely, I wasn't finding my unformed future as frightening as it could have been. I could do something I liked now, get a job. What did math majors do in the practical world? I didn't want to be a teacher, and I couldn't be an accountant, but... "I could run a little business like a cafe," I said rather experimentally, seeing a line of orderly account books filled with my neat columns of numbers.
"Donald wouldn't like it."
Finn had a faint grin as he traded out the small wrench.
"His widow, waiting tables and keeping a till."
"Donald could be a bit of a prig," I confessed.
"God rest his soul," Finn said, straight-faced.
What a difference a few days made. He used to talk like he was being charged a dollar for every word that came out of his mouth. And now here he was making jokes. "What do you want to do?"
"What do you mean, Mrs. McGowan?"
"Well, you're surely not going to work for Eve forever, making one-pan breakfast to cure her hangovers and disarming her every night before bed." I sniffed the damp evening breeze. It smelled like more rain might be coming. A pair of old men in crumpled caps were hurrying home across the street, casting anxious looks at the skies. "What would you do, if you could do anything?"
"Before the war, I worked in a garage. Always thought maybe I'd start my own someday. Fix up other people's cars, do some restoration work." Finn finished up inside the Lagonda and gently lowered the hood.
Don't think that'll happen now.
Why not?
They wouldn't be much good at the business side of things. Besides, there are lots of former soldiers looking for work, and even more looking for bank loans. Who's going to give a good garage job or a start-up loan to an ex-soldier with a Pentonville stint on his record?
He spoke matter-of-factly. Is that why you're herring off to Limoges with Eve and me? I switched off the flashlight, handing it back. There was dim, veiled light from the streetlights overhead, but it seemed very dark without the flashlight's bright beam. I know why I'm going, and I know why Eve's going. But what about you?
There's not much else for me to do.
His soft voice had a smile.
Besides, I like both of you.
I hesitated. Why did you go to prison? And don't say it's because you stole a swan from Kew Gardens or made off with the crown jewels. I rushed on, twisting my false wedding ring. Really? What happened? He rubbed slowly at his oil-smeared hands with a rag. Eve told us she was a spy in the Great War. I told you I slept with half a frat. You know our secrets. He put his toolbox away in the trunk, turned the rag over to the clean side, and began rubbing at the rain marks on the Lagonda's dark blue fender. Through the broad front window of the hotel, the night porter watched us idly.
They saw some bad things, Finn said, during the last year of the war.
He stopped for so long I thought he wasn't going to say anything else.
I have a temper, he said finally.
I smiled. No, you don't. You're the levelest man I know. He brought his open hand down against the fender in a sudden slap. I jumped, voice breaking off.
I have a temper, he repeated evenly. The months after I left my regiment, it wasn't a bro time. I'd go out, get wrecked, start fights. Eventually I got arrested for one of them. Earned me a term in Pentonville for assault.
Assault? An ugly word. I looked at Finn and I just couldn't see it. Who'd you get in a fight with? I asked softly.
I don't know. Never met him before that night.
Why did you fight him?
I don't remember. I was fair smashed, walking around angry.
Finn leaned his back against the Lagonda, arms folded tight across his chest.
He said something, who knows what. I hit him. Kept on hitting him. 6 people pulled me off once I started bashing his head against the doorpost. Thank God they got me off him before I cracked his skull.
I stayed silent. It was misting now, very gently.
He got better, Phil said. Eventually. I went to Pentonville.
Have you hit anybody since? I asked, because I had to say something. He stared straight ahead, not looking at anything.
No.
Maybe your temper isn't the problem. He laughed shortly.
I beat a man to a pulp, broke his nose and his jaw and his eye socket and 4 of his fingers, and my temper isn't the problem.
Did you get in fights like that before the war?
No.
Then maybe the temper isn't really you. It's the war. Or rather, whatever he saw there. I wondered what that was, but I didn't ask.
That's a lousy excuse, Charlie. Or every soldier who came home would be in a lockup.
Some go to prison, some go back to work, some kill themselves. I thought of my brother, painfully. Everyone's different.
You should go in, Finn said abruptly. Before you get old Drukit.
Yank here. I don't know what that means.
Before you get drenched. Not good for the bairn, Mrs. McGowan.
I ignored that, leaning up against the Lagonda beside him. Does Eve know?
Yes.
What'd she say?
I have a weakness for handsome men with Scottish accents and prison records, so I'll give you a try. I never mentioned it again.
He shook his head, hair falling over his eyes again.
She's not one for judging people.
Neither am I.
You still shouldn't be hung around a bad apple like me.
Finn, I'm a former good girl and a current unwed mother-to-be. Eve's a former spy and a current drunk. You're a former convict and a current mechanic and driver and cooker of English breakfasts. You know why none of us judge?
I bumped his shoulder with mine until he finally looked down at me. Because none of us have the goddamn right to look down our noses at anyone else's sins.
He looked down at me with an invisible smile that began and ended in the corners of his eyes.
I reached behind me and hoisted myself up to sit on the Lagonda's long hood. It put me almost level with Finn when he turned to face me, as I leaned forward to fit my mouth carefully, gently against his. His lips were soft and his jaw rough, just like the first time I tried to kiss him. Just like the first time, his hands rose to my waist. But this time I broke off the kiss before he could move back. I didn't think I could stand it if he pushed me away again. But he didn't. He lowered his head back to mine, catching my lips and lingering. His hands were big and warm on either side of my waist, pulling me closer against him on the edge of the Lagonda's hood. I let my hands slide into his rumpled hair where they'd been aching to go, and his hands slipped under the edge of my new striped jersey. He didn't go lunging upward from there, just ran the backs of his fingers very slowly up and down the bare sides of my waist as we kissed. I was trembling all over by the time we pulled apart.
"I got engine grease on you,"
he said, looking down at his oil-stained hands.
"Sorry, lass."
"It'll wash off," I managed to say. I didn't want to wash him off me, his smell or his taste or his engine grease. I wanted to keep kissing him, but it was an open street and the misty drizzle was going to be rain soon. So I slid down from the car, and we turned and wandered back into the hotel. "Come up to my room," I wanted to say. "Come up with me." But the night porter was giving us one of those very French looks, an impassive expression over knowing eyes.
"Bonsoir, Monsieur Kilgore,"
he greeted Finn, eyes flicking to the hotel register where we'd signed in.
"Madame McGowan."
"Wonderful," I muttered as I thumped back to my solitary room. I've not only ruined Miss Charlie St. Clair's reputation, I have officially ruined Mrs. Donald McGowan's. My Donald would have been shocked. Chapter 20. Eve. July, 1915. Renée's gift, offered with a flourish shortly after Eve returned from her journey, was a silk robe. Rose red, fine enough to slip through a ring, but not new. It smelled vaguely of a woman's perfume, some woman who undoubtedly saw it seized in a requisition raid, and now it had ended up on Eve's back. She imagined the Kaiser's train blowing to bits. Let it give her pleasure. Let that pleasure show on her face as she rubbed her cheek against the silk.
"Thank you, monsieur."
"It suits you."
He leaned back, clearly pleased that she was now suitably outfitted for her surroundings.
Eve found herself darkly amused by his aesthetic relief. They were in his opulent study. He wore one of his beautiful dressing gowns, as he usually did while waiting for Eve to finish bathing away any possible food smells from a long night's shift. Now that she had come out in a silk robe, rather than a towel or her black work dress, she was no longer an eyesore.
"I've a mind to take you away somewhere."
He unstoppered his decanter of elderflower liqueur, pouring the usual modest measure for himself, and the generous one that would make Marguerite's head spin.
"I dislike hurried nighttime trysts. I've been planning a short journey to Limoges soon. I may take you with me."
Eve sipped. "Why Limoges?"
"Lille is dreary."
He made a face.
"It will be pleasant to walk down a street that does not have a German name. And I'm thinking of opening a second restaurant. Limoges may prove to be the place. I will take a weekend to inspect suitable locations."
A weekend with René Bordelon. It wasn't the thought of the nights that made Eve shudder. It was the days. Long suppers, cups of tea, afternoon walks at his side. Having to sift every word and guard every reaction. She would be exhausted long before she got to the linen sheets. And what happened between them? Half a chess game and two glasses of fragrant elderflower fire later, they retired to the bedroom. A suitable interval after things were concluded there, Eve slipped back into her work dress and prepared to go home. Watching her dress,
Veneer gave a small tisk.
This rushing out before the sheets grow cold, he said. Most uncivilized.
I don't want there to be talk, monsieur.
Not to mention the fact that Eve didn't dare doze off in his presence. What if she muttered German or English in her sleep? Or something else she couldn't explain away? It didn't bear thinking about.
If you spend the night with him in Limoges, you will have to think about it.
There will be gossip in town if I don't go home at nights, she said, sliding into her stockings. The baker pisses in the dough he uses to bake for the women who go with the Germans.
René looked amused.
I am not a German, my dear.
You're worse. A French Judas who betrayed his own for profit. Germans were hated in Lille. But men like René Bordelon were loathed with an even brighter passion. When the Germans lose this war, you will be the first strung up from a lamppost.
I'll still be scorned, Eve hedged. Threatened.
A shrug.
If anyone threatens you, give me their names. They will be reported to the Germans and find themselves with a ruinous fine or jail time. Perhaps worse. The Commandant would oblige me, being eager to reduce discord among the civilians.
The thought that someone might be hauled to a cell or fined to the point of starvation on his whisper did not seem to trouble René in the slightest. Eve had overheard him several times passing names to German officers over the dinner brandy. People who displeased him, who hoarded requisition supplies, who spoke out against the invaders. But to hear the suggestion tossed out as casually as this... She studied his expression wonderingly. It really did not stir his conscience at all.
Are you really still so shy, my pet?
He tilted his head.
Too shy to let people know you are now mine.
I just don't want bread with piss in it, Eve whispered, as if in an agony of embarrassment.
Really, it was horror. René looked as though hovering between a chuckle or a frown at her honesty. To Eve's relief, he decided on a chuckle.
Eventually, Marguerite, I'll teach you to be indifferent to what people think. It's very freeing to care for no one's opinion but your own.
He looked urbane even when naked, his flesh pale and smooth against the linens.
Limoges soon. I'll take you with me. You may concoct some story for the staff about an aunt taken ill if you wish. I shall be publicly displeased with you.
Thank you, monsieur.
But Eve had no intention of going with him to Limoges. In 2 more days, if all went well, the Kaiser would be dead and the world would be remade. It will not be that easy, she told herself. Wars were vast machines. They didn't grind to an instant halt when one man died, even if that man was a king. But even if the war didn't end, the world would still be a vastly different place. In that world, René Bordelon would surely be taking rapid stock of his allies and enemies, not taking leisurely weekends in Limoges. The days before the Kaiser's arrival passed at the speed of a glacier, and the nights in René's immaculate bed moved even more slowly, even if she did learn some intriguing facts and figures about the local airfields that Uncle Edward would find very interesting. At last, the day dawned, hot and sticky, even in the early hours. And the Fleur du Mal met in silence. Eve saw the same expression in Lily's darting eyes and Violette's wary ones. A hope so violent it had to be stamped down like a hydra. They hurried out of the city without speaking, making for the grassy hills.
We should not be going to watch that train, Violette said.
Tais-toi, Lily said.
I for one will go mad if I have to sit inside listening for airplanes overhead. Besides... I can't make my report to Uncle Edward until I have results, so there's no use going back to my usual rounds.
A bad idea,
Violette muttered, but none of them went back. They made their way past the local farmhouses, small and ravaged, and the three women took their place on a long, low hill, overlooking the distant train tracks. The same hill where Lily and Eve had scouted terrain for the attack. Violette chewed a strand of grass in terse silence. Eve flexed and unflexed her fingers. Lily chatted as though she was at a party.
I bought the most ghastly hat on my last trip through Tournai. Blue satin roses and spotted net. I left it on the train, and it's probably still there.
No self-respecting streetwalker would steal that blue satin pile of... Lily, Eve said. Shut up. Thank you, said Violette, speaking for the first time in 2 hours. They stared down at the train tracks as if concentration alone could make them ignite. The sun climbed higher. Lily's eyes proved sharpest. Is that... A tiny smear of smoke. A train. It chugged sedately into view, too far away to hear its clacking wheels or the peals of steam from its engine. Too far away to make out details. But according to Eve's information, this was it. The train that carried Kaiser Wilhelm in anonymity toward the front. Eve looked up. The blue skies stretched empty. Lily's small hand covered hers in the grass, gripping tight. Nick ta mère, she said, eyes following Eve skyward. You RFC buggers! The train inched closer. Lily's grip was like a vice. Eve reached for Violette's hand on the other side and squeezed that just as hard. Violette squeezed back. When Eve heard the low drone of airplanes, she thought her heart would stop. For a moment it was just a buzz, like hovering bees. But then she saw them, two airplanes in formation like eagles. She didn't know if they were monoplanes or biplanes. She knew nothing about aviation, just the meaningless technical words she committed to memory when German officers droned over desert. But these airplanes were beautiful, and she let out a gasp. Lily muttered obscenities that sounded like prayers, and Violette turned to stone. You know, Eve heard herself saying tautly, I don't even know how airplanes bomb targets. Do they just throw the explosives over the side? This time Lily said, Shut up. The train surged along. The airplane streaked to the blue sky. Please, they were all thinking. Please make the hit. Let it all be over now, on this summer day with the smell of warm grass and the sound of birds. They were too far away to see any explosives drop, or the rounds, or whatever they were. They would only see the explosion, the fire, the smoke. The airplanes droned like lazy birds over the train. Now, Eve thought. But there was no explosion. No smoke, no fire, no crashing derailment sending the train careening from its tracks. The Kaiser chugged placidly on toward Lille. They failed, Eve said numbly. They failed. Violette spoke in empty rage. All the explosives were faulty. Make another pass, Eve howled inside. Try again. But the airplanes disappeared, not proud eagles, but failed, draggle-tailed sparrows. Why? Who cared why? The Kaiser lived. He would tour the front, get a view of his soldiers in the trenches, perhaps pass through Lille and nod approvingly at the clocks turned to Berlin time, the boulevards renamed with hammered German signs. Unless he came to eat at Le Lete and gave Eve the opportunity to bury a steak knife in the back of his neck, or season his chocolate mousse with rat poison, he would return to Germany alive and well, riding the machine of war as easily as he rode his untouched train through the countryside. It's just as well, Violette rose, sounding as though her throat were full of gravel. The Kaiser's death at Lille would focus all the German attention here. We'd likely get caught. And it's not as though the war would have just ended, Eve heard herself saying emptily. It wouldn't have changed She couldn't make the word come, and didn't care enough to force it. She just trailed off, rising and brushing off her skirt with mechanical motions. Lily hadn't moved. She stared at the distant train, and her face was ancient. Violette looked down, spectacles flashing. Get up, Lily. Those goddamned... Lily shook her head. Oh, you bastards. Ma petite, please get up. Lily rose. She looked down for a moment, kicking the grass. And when she raised her chin, she was smiling. Grimly, thinly, but smiling. I don't know about you, mes anges, but I feel like getting drunk tonight. But Eve wouldn't be there sharing whatever rot-cut brandy or whiskey Lily could get her hands on. I have René tonight, she thought. And tomorrow night,
And soon, if he takes me to Limoges, I will have him for 2 whole days and nights. All the nights had a rhythm. The bath, the quiet 10 minutes or so afterward, silk robe whispering against damp skin, sipping at a very large glass of elderflower liqueur. As Eve drank, René would put on a record and tell her, maybe, about the Debussy piece they were listening to, and how Impressionism was expressed orchestrally. And two were the other impressionists of art and literature, as well as music. That was the easy part. All Eve had to do was listen admiringly. Then the moment came when René took the glass from her hand and drew her to the bedroom next door. Then it all became difficult. His kisses were long and slow, and he left his eyes open. His eyes remained open throughout everything, unblinking, measuring, watching for the smallest gasp or hitch in breath. He unwrapped Eve from the rose-red silk at leisure, spread her unhurriedly on his pristine sheets, discarded his own robe, and then he stretched over her and took his time. How very, very much Eve wished he would take his pleasure quickly and roll off. That would have been so easy.
"I've never trained a virgin before," he had remarked the first time. "Normally I value expertise over innocence. We shall love to see how fast you learn. I don't expect I will please you the first few times. That's the way for women, rather unfairly, I've always thought."
René liked to explore every part of Eve, tracing every crevice and corner of her body, his tongue lingering as long on the spaces behind her ears and the hollows of her knees, as on the more expected places. He spun it out endlessly, content to play for hours, taking her hand and using it to explore his own pale, unmarked skin. He turned her and posed her, positioned her and explored her, watching and learning through it all.
"Your eyes widen just a little whenever I surprise you,"
he observed one night.
"Like a doe's."
And he turned to her breast and employed his teeth in a bit of sudden expert roughness.
"Like that,"
he said, brushing her lashes with his thumb. It wasn't something Eve ever considered, how the intimacy of skin against naked skin unpeeled another layer from people besides clothes, how it was another way for people to know one another. "I do not want him to know me," she thought desperately. Her work depended on him not knowing her, yet every night he learned more. It is hardest to lie to those who know us best. Captain Cameron had said that in Folkestone. Eve shoved the thought of him away, not wanting it anywhere near her nights in René's bed. But the fear persisted. If René learned her well enough, would she be able to continue fooling him? "Yes," she thought fiercely. "It will mean more and better lying, but that you can do. And remember, you are learning him too." Night by night, Eve learned the twitch of René's every muscle, each flare of his eyes. The man armored in his beautiful suits was easier to read now that she knew how the naked muscles moved beneath. Once he finished toying with her, the joining was swift. He preferred to be behind or above, hand twined in her hair to tip her face back, holding her where he could see her every reaction. He liked her to look back at him.
"Eyes open, pet,"
he ordered frequently, never missing a stroke. And when he finally allowed his own pleasure to make an end of it, he sank slowly over her, letting her body cushion his as their sweat cooled, and picked up whatever conversation they'd been having in his study, about Debussy or Klimt or Provençal wine. Tonight it was about the Kaiser.
"I'm told he was pleased by his visit. The airfield met with his approval, though one is to wonder what he thought of the trenches. Ghastly places, one hears."
"Did you meet him?" Eve lay still, her fingers twined with René's against the pillow, and her legs tangled around his lean thighs. During moments like these, he was at his most incautious. "I hoped he would come to Lulette." René caught a flicker of emotion from her there, as much as she masked her face in innocence.
"So you could spit in his vichyssoise."
Eve made light of it, not lying. She never lied when they lay pressed together, skin against skin. Not if she could help it. Thoughts traveled faster, skin to skin. "I wouldn't spit in his soup," she said frankly.
but I'd think about it.
René laughed, rolling away. His flesh slid from her, and Eve repressed the usual shiver.
One hears he is a vulgar man, Kaiser or no. Still, I was hoping he'd come to the restaurant. Quite a coup that would have been, playing host to an emperor.
Eve pulled the sheet up over herself. Has he ordered any any changes in orders after seeing Lille?
Yes, rather interesting.
And René told her.
What good information you're getting, Lily commented on her next visit, a few days after the Kaiser's departure.
She stopped by as Eve was getting ready for her evening shift. Eve sat brushing out her hair as Lily copied the latest report. She held up the rice paper, shaking her head half in contempt and half in amusement.
Is the German commandant really talking about the new artillery improvements in public, over Cherry's Jubilee and brandy?
No.
Eve kept her eyes on the rickety washstand mirror.
René Baudelon does in private, over a pillow.
She could feel Lily's eyes on her back. Eve spoke with as much dry formality as possible, but she still tripped at the first hurdle.
Just before our interview with Uncle Edward, I became...
What?
Mistress?
He might employ her, but he didn't keep her.
Whore.
He didn't pay her beyond her wages, except an elderflower liqueur and a robe she was not allowed to wear except in his study.
Lover?
There was no love there. But Lily didn't need the sentence finished.
Pauvre petite, she said,
and crossed to take the brush from Eve's hand.
I'm sorry. Does he hurt you?
No.
She squeezed her eyes shut.
Worse.
How?
Eve's throat locked.
Lily, I'm so ashamed.
The brush crackled through Eve's hair.
I know you aren't one to have your head turned easily, which is why I thought you could take such a step without compromising yourself. But such things can become more complicated than we anticipate. Are you developing a tendresse for him?
No.
A bitter shake of Eve's head.
Never in this wide world.
Good. If I thought you were becoming conflicted, I'd have to report it.
And I would,
Lily said evenly, continuing to stroke the brush through Eve's hair.
I'm terribly fond of you, but the work is too important to compromise. So if it's not a tendresse, what makes you so ashamed?
Eve forced her burning eyes open, meeting Lily's gaze in the mirror.
The first few times I went to bed with him, pleasure wasn't required,
or even expected.
Now,
however, Eve had time to grow accustomed to what happened in the crisp, immaculate bed, and René Baudelon had high standards in bedmates, as he did in everything else. Pleasure was expected, giving it and getting it. That had led to something utterly unimaginable.
Tell me.
Lily sounded matter-of-fact.
Not much shocks me, you may be sure of that.
I am starting to enjoy it, Eve said, and squeezed her eyes shut again.
The long brushstrokes never stopped.
I despise him.
Eve managed to keep her voice steady. So how can I possibly take pleasure in what he
in what he does to
The word wouldn't come. Eve let it die.
He must be good at it, Lily said.
He's the enemy.
Eve realized she was trembling all over. Rage or shame or disgust, she didn't know.
There are collaborators in this city one can pity. Women who sleep with officers so they can feed their families. Men who work for the Germans so they can keep their children warm. But René Baudelon is nothing but a profiteer. He's almost as bad as the Huns.
Maybe so, Lily said. But lovemaking is a skill like any other, you know. A bad man can be a good carpenter, or a good hatmaker, or a good lover. The skill has nothing to do with the soul.
Oh, Lily, Eve rubbed at her temples. You sound so French.
Yes, and a French woman is exactly the person to talk to about such things.
Lily straightened Eve's head toward the mirror.
So, Monsieur Profiteer is good at what he does between the sheets, And you are feeling guilty for enjoying yourself.
Eve thought of René decanting a fine wine and inhaling the bouquet, René tipping an oyster down his throat in a lingering motion. He's a sophisticate, whether he's enjoying a glass of Bordeaux or a fine cigar or me. He takes his time getting it right.
A physical response to skill, Lily said rather carefully.
He's not a mark of what is happening in the head or the heart, you know.
A physical response unrelated to the head or the heart is what marks a whore.
Eve said it brutally.
Oh, pish. That sounds like someone's provincial aunt talking. Never listen to people like that, little Daisy. They're not only joyless drones. They usually wear chintz and think housework is a virtue.
I still feel like a whore, Eve whispered. Lily stopped brushing and rested her chin atop Eve's head.
I imagine it was your mother who told your woman who enjoys a man when he isn't her husband is a slut.
Something like that. Eve found it hard to disagree with such a statement. She looked at René with nothing but dislike. How was it that his patient, innovative, cold-skinned hands could evoke anything even remotely pleasurable?
Ordinary women wouldn't feel this, she began, but Lily waved a hand.
If we were ordinary, we'd be at home reusing our tea leaves and rolling bandages to support the war effort, not carrying Lugas and smuggling coded messages around in our hairpins.
Steel blades such as you and I do not measure against the standards for ordinary women.
Lily lifted her chin from the top of Eve's head.
Listen to me. I am older than you and considerably wiser. Believe me when I say it is entirely possible to despise a man and still enjoy him between the sheets.
Merde, sometimes it's even better that way. Disgust adds a certain intensity. Spasms of love, spasms of hate. It is all the same.
Puccini certainly had that right in Tosca.
Marguerite Lefrancois wouldn't know Tosca, but Eve did.
Tosca kills the man before he can force himself on her.
Maybe you'll kill Bordelot someday too. Think about that when he's on top of you. That'll give you a spasm of pleasure, all right.
Eve found herself giving a watery laugh. Lily's tone was light, but her warm, steady presence was a shield at Eve's back.
So,
the leader of the Alice Network stepped away, got them both cups of the horrible boiled walnut leaves and licorice that did nothing to replace tea, and then took the seat opposite Eve.
You went to Monsieur Profetier's bed intending to please him, so you could go on spying on him.
Yes.
The information you get from him is good, much better than you get from merely waiting tables, Lily said. And you have now learned that part of what pleases your profiteer is letting him please you. You'll have to allow it, if you're to stay in his bed and keep collecting that precious information.
I would rather fake the pleasure, Eve heard herself saying.
What a strange conversation this was to be having in a bare little room over cups of terrible makeshift tea, as prosaically as English ladies discuss church matters over china saucers.
But I'm not a good enough liar, Lily. I am a very great liar, but I cannot stifle pleasure and fake it at the same time. He is so very good at reading me now.
And is he pleased with what he reads from you?
Yes. He's a little fond of me, I think. He's taking me for a weekend in Limoges soon.
Then go, and take him for everything he's worth.
Lily looked fierce. Every glass of wine before bed, every petit mort in bed, every drop of news he leaks after bed. This job has few enough pleasures. The food is terrible, the liquor is almost non-existent, the cigarettes are getting scarcer, and the clothes are appalling. We have nightmares and complexions like ashtrays, and we live in constant expectation of getting arrested. So don't feel guilty for the little bit of pleasure you get, from whatever source. Take it.
Eve sipped another swallow of sour liquid.
You aren't going to say a word about sin?
Lily was oddly devout, despite her outer frivolity. She carried a rosary with her on every border crossing, and spoke fondly of her confessor and the nuns at Anderlecht.
We're mortals. We sin. Lily shrugged. It's our task in life. Le Grand Seigneur forgives us. That's his. And what's your task? Picking us all up when we're wallowing in the mire. Even stolid Violette had her black moments. Eve had seen her despondent and shaking one evening, after losing a downed pilot to a German sentry halfway across the border. And it had been Lily who brought Violette out of the darkness, just as she did tonight for Eve. Are you ever frightened and despondent? Lily lifted one shoulder, almost flippant. Danger does not frighten me, but I do not like to see it. Now, haven't you got work to do? I certainly do. She was gone 10 minutes later, rice paper report rolled inside the staff of her umbrella. Eve departed in the other direction for Lilette. As she entered the restaurant, already being set with linens and silver, she passed Christine, who twitched her skirts out of the way. "Whore," she whispered, voice barely audible. Eve stopped, looking over her shoulder. She raised her eyebrows, giving them Lily's devastating arch. "I don't know what you mean." "I saw you." Christine's hiss was spiteful, though she kept her eyes on the candle she was lighting. "Going up the stairs to Monsieur Bordelon's rooms after shift was done. He's a profiteer, and you're just a..." Eve took a fast step forward, seizing Christine's wrist. "Say a word and I'll get you fired. One word of gossip, and you'll be out of this job where you get leftover tartiflette and lobster bisque at closing. Hear me?" She sank her nails into Christine's wrist, shifting so the waiters bustling past with trays of crystal wouldn't notice. "I can have you fired," Eve repeated, and didn't stutter once. "Blacklisted. You'll never get another job in this city, and then you will starve." Christine wrenched away. "Whore," she hissed again. Eve shrugged, gliding away. She'd been hitting herself with that word for quite a few days now. But she discovered in that moment that she wasn't willing to be called whore by anyone else. Least of all a woman stupider than a bowl of lobster bisque.
Chapter 21. Charlie. May 1947. "I remember this." Eve pointed to the stone-arched bridge spanning the slow blue river that wound through Limoges. A Roman bridge, I thought, crumbling and romantic-looking, the little French cars hooting and dashing across it, looking incongruously modern. "It was twilight, not afternoon," Eve went on. "René Bordelon stopped there, right by the river, and said he'd always thought outside seating an abomination for any restaurant that was not a common café. But if he could have that view, he might consider it." She turned away, hands thrust into the pockets of her fraying sweater, and looked along the grassy slope, the trees, the buildings, stretching away along the bank. "The son of a bitch got his wish. He opened his second restaurant down the bank, with this view." She went striding off down the cobbled street. I looked at Finn, and we both shrugged in unison, wandering after her. Eve had awakened early, and we'd made good time from Paris to Limoges. Eve had been talkative again, so each mile brought more war stories, though some of them I had trouble believing. A failed attack on the Kaiser. She'd directed us to a hotel near Limoges' medieval cathedral, sending Finn to park the Lagonda, while she went in and interrogated the concierge in rapid French, waving the scribbled address I'd given her, the address of the second Lulite, where Rose had worked. As soon as Finn came back, Eve was setting out into the city on foot, leading us down twisting cobbled streets. Limoges was a pretty place, weeping willows drooping toward the river's surface, Gothic church spires piercing the skyline, potted geraniums hanging from balconies. And it didn't have the half-wrecked look of northern France, which had been more thoroughly overrun by Nazis.
"More peaceful here than in Paris," Finn said, echoing my thoughts.
He strode along in his shirt sleeves, drawing a few disapproving looks from Frenchmen in their crisp summer suits. But the women didn't seem to mind his rumpled appearance, if the glances were anything to go by. Finn looked back at all those passing faces, the bustling young mothers with their straw hats, the men frowning over their newspapers at café tables.
"Pink cheeks," he noted. "Not so pinched and bleak as the people we saw up north."
"This was the free zone," I said, finally able to keep up with Finn's long stride, now that I had flat sandals and cropped trousers,
rather than tottering heels. The Vichy crew wasn't anything to write home about, but the people here still had it better than they did up north.
Heh,
Eve snorted from ahead of us.
Don't be so sure. They had the Milice to deal with, and the Milice were nasty buggers.
Milice?
Finn asked.
French militia, recruited to hunt their own for the Germans. I always hated those bastards.
But the Milice weren't around during your war, Eve. I tilted my head, curious. You weren't part of the last war.
Says you, Yank.
Wait, did you work in the Second War, too? What did you...
Not relevant.
Eve stopped suddenly, cocking her head as the sound of bells drifted down through the lazy summer air.
Those bells. I remember those bells.
She resumed her straight-backed stride down the riverbank, and I followed, shaking my head.
When were you last here in Limoges, Gardner? Finn asked.
August, 1915,
Eve said, not looking back.
René Bordelon brought me for a weekend.
Just a handful of words, but the suspicion I'd been nursing slid to certainty, a suspicion about the elegant owner of L'Été. I'd known from the sheer volume of loathing in Eve's voice that he was something special to her. You don't hate someone that much without a very personal involvement. Now I knew. He'd been her lover. Eve had climbed into bed with the enemy to spy on him. I looked at her, her proud, ravaged face and soldierly stride down the cobbled street. She hadn't been much older than me at the time. Could you climb into bed with a Hun just to spy on him, Charlie? Pretend I liked him, smile at his jokes, let him unbutton my blouse. All so I could rifle his desk and his conversation for useful information, knowing I could get shot any time I was caught. I looked at Eve, and I admired her so much. I didn't just want her to think well of me. I wanted to be more like her myself. I wanted to introduce Rose to her, meet the crazy cow who helped me find you when everyone else gave up. I could imagine Eve giving Rose that down-the-nose gaze, and Rose giving it right back. I could imagine the three of us tossing back drinks and talking over each other, the strangest trio of women ever to become friends. I wondered if Eve ever had a friend who meant to her what Rose meant to me. In all her war stories, the only woman she ever mentioned was Violette, who in Roubaix had spat in Eve's face.
That's a serious face you've got all of a sudden, Finn said, looking down at me.
Just musing. I couldn't manage to be sad. The sun was warm on my head, and my arm brushed Finn's every other stride or two, which filled me with a ridiculous shiver of sensation. Every step is another step closer to Rose. He cocked an eyebrow.
What makes you so certain she's waiting to be found?
I don't know. I tried to put it into words. The hope keeps getting stronger the closer we get.
Even though she didn't write you in, what, 3, 4 years?
Maybe she did write me. Letters went astray all the time during the war. Besides, I was only 11 when she last saw me. She might have still thought I was too young to hear something as shameful as... I patted my stomach mutely. I'm feeling more and more strongly that she's here. Eve makes fun of me when I say I can feel her, but... Eve stopped so suddenly I nearly walked into her.
L'Été,
she said quietly. It must have been a lovely restaurant a few years ago. I could see the beautiful lines of the building, old beams in the half-timbered style. A wrought iron fence enclosing a dining terrace that took full advantage of the view. But the low-hanging sign with the carved gilt letters spelling out L'Été had been crudely splashed with red paint, and the broad front windows were boarded over. It had been a long time since waiters served vichyssoise and millefeuille here. What happened? I asked. But Eve had already gone to the medieval doors, padlocked and barred. She gestured to the letters carved roughly into the wood, half obscured by slops of paint.
Collaborateur, she said quietly.
Up to your old tricks, René.
You should have learned the first time. The Germans always fucking lose.
Easy to see from hindsight, Finn said mildly. It wasn't that clear cut on the ground.
But Eve was already moving to the next building, reaching the door and hammering on it. No one answered, and we moved on to the next house. It took 4 different tries and 1 failed interview with a housewife who knew nothing about the old restaurant. But at last we found an ancient French woman, with a cigarette dangling from her first 2 fingers, and bitter, bitter eyes.
"Le laité," she answered Eve's question. "Closed at the end of 44, on the good riddance."
"Why good riddance?" A curl of the woman's lip.
"The place was a nest for Germans. Every SS officer with a French horn on his arm went there on his nights off."
"The owner allowed that?" Eve's posture had changed, become softened and slump-shouldered, and her voice was conversational. She turned into someone else, the way I'd seen her do it in a London pawn shop. And I hung back with Finn, letting her work the magic.
"What was his name?"
"The owner."
"René de Malassis,"
the old woman said and spat.
"A profiteer. Some people said he was in the pocket of the milice, and it wouldn't surprise me."
"De Malassis?" I filed the name away even as Eve asked. "What happened to Monsieur de Malassis?"
"Disappeared into the night. Christmas of 44. He knew which way the wind was turning. Who knows where he went? But he hasn't showed his face here since."
The old woman gave a slow, unpleasant smile.
"If he did, he'd get a short noose and a long struggle on a lamppost."
"For collaboration?"
"There are collaborators, madame, and then there are men like him. In 43, you know what de Malassis did. He had a young sous-chef dragged out of those doors at the end of the night shift, announcing that the lad was a thief. Searched him right there in the street with everyone watching. The restaurant's entire staff, passers-by, neighbors like me who came running at the noise."
I could see it. The nighttime mist rising off the river, the wide-eyed bystanders, a boy in a sous-chef's apron trembling. Eve said nothing, listening so intently she'd turned to stone. The old woman went on.
"De Malassis dragged a handful of silver out of the boy's pockets and said he'd telephone the police, promised he'd have the boy arrested and shipped east. Who knows if he could have done it, but everyone knew de Malassis stacked up favors with the Nazis. The boy tried to run. De Malassis had a pistol in that elegant jacket of his, and he shot the boy in the back before he'd gone 10 steps.
"Did he now?" Eve said softly. I shivered.
"He did."
The old woman was brusque.
"And de Malassis just stood there cleaning his hands off with the handkerchief, grimacing at the smell of gun smoke. Told his maître d' to telephone the authorities to have the mess cleaned up. Then turned his back on that boy's body and went inside. Cool as cream. That's the kind of man he was. Not just a collaborator. An elegant killer."
Finn spoke.
"Did the Nazis make any protest?"
"Not that I ever heard. He must have called in favors to avoid arrest or censure, because his restaurant kept right on prospering. Oh, there's plenty in Limoges who would have happily put a rope around that man's neck. And he knew it. That's why he ran, once it was clear the Germans would lose."
The old woman took a drag of her cigarette, looking at us sharply.
"Why are you so curious? Is de Malassis any relation to you?"
"To the devil, maybe,"
Eve said with soft venom, and the two women exchanged tight, acid smiles.
"Thank you for your time,"
Eve said and turned away. But I stepped forward, addressing the old woman in my slangy American French.
"Pardonnez-moi, madame.
I am looking for a relation. Someone who might have worked at Le Litté, not a collaborator," I said hastily as the woman's brows came together. "You might have noticed her. People tended to notice Rose. Young, blonde, a laugh like a bell." I brought out the worn photograph Rosie had sent me in one of her letters in 43. The photo of her looking over her shoulder like a Betty Grable pinup, grinning. Before the old woman said a word, I knew she'd recognized Rose.
"Yes," she said. "Pretty girl. You'd see those SS bastards pinching her on the hip when she brought their drinks. And she didn't go batting her lashes like some of those sluts de Malassis hired. She'd find a way to spill a drink on them, and then go oozing apologies sweet as pie. You could see it all the way across the terrace.
That rocked me back on my heels. A new memory of Rose that wasn't mine. Rose spilling beer on German soldiers. My eyes prickled. It sounded like her.
When did you last see her?
My voice came out hoarse, and I realized for the first time that Finn had taken my hand and gripped it tight.
Before the restaurant closed. She must have stopped working there.
The woman spat on the ground again.
It wasn't a place for decent girls.
My heart sank. I'd so hoped Rose would be alive and here, living in Limoges. But I looked at the old woman and forced a smile.
Thank you for your help, madame.
I wasn't out of ideas yet. Eve had another of her bad spells that night. She didn't start screaming this time. She just woke me with a series of dull thuds against the wall between our bedrooms. I poked my head out into the hotel hall. No Finn, just me. I pulled a sweater over my slip and padded to Eve's door, pressing my ear to the panels. Still that dull thwack, as though she was knocking something against the wall. Hopefully not her head, I thought, and rapped softly.
Eve?
The thwacks kept going.
Don't aim that pistol at me. I'm coming in.
Eve sat on the floor in the far corner, but she was clear-eyed this time, not mumbling in the grip of waking nightmares. She stared at the ceiling, the Luger in her hand, and she methodically banged its butt against the wall. Thwack. 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 I put my hands on my hips, glaring.
Must you?
Helps me think.
Thwack. Thwack. It's midnight. Can't you sleep instead of think?
Haven't even tried. The nightmares will be waiting. I'll wait it out till dawn.
Thwack.
Thwack.
Well, try to bang more quietly. I turned to go, yawning. Eve's voice called me back.
Stay. I can use your hands.
I looked over my shoulder. For what?
Can you field strip a Luger? They didn't teach me that at Bennington, no. And I thought all Americans were gun mad. Let me show you.
I found myself sitting cross-legged opposite Eve as she pointed out the various bits of the pistol, and I clumsily broke it apart.
The barrel, the side plate, the firing pin.
Why am I learning this? I asked, and yelped as she hit me across the knuckles for pushing the receiver axle the wrong way.
Field stripping a Luger, that really used to help me think. My hands are too buggered up to do it properly anymore, so I'll borrow yours. Get the oil out of my satchel.
I started spreading out the pistol's disassembled bits. What are you pondering? Her eyes had a thoughtful glitter that wasn't whiskey, though I saw the usual tumbler with its half measure of amber fluid at her knee.
René de Malcy, she said. Or rather René Bordelon, and where he went.
You're assuming that he's still alive, then? She denied it so stubbornly and he'll be.
He'll be 72 now, Eve said softly. But yes, I'm betting he's still alive.
She couldn't stop the ripple that crossed her face, a ripple of loathing and self-loathing together. How rare it was to see an emotion she couldn't mask. She looked almost fragile, and an odd protectiveness tightened my chest. What makes you certain de Malassie is your Bordelon? I asked gently.
A half smile. Malassie is the surname of the publisher who printed Baudelaire's Les Fleurs du Mal.
I'm really starting to hate Baudelaire, and I've never even read him. At this point, I didn't need to.
You're lucky.
Her voice was dry.
I had to listen to René quote his whole damned oeuvre cover to cover.
I paused, holding the Luger's barrel in one hand and the oiled cloth in the other. So you and he were... A raised eyebrow.
Are you shocked?
No, I'm no saint. I patted the little problem, which seemed happier these days. It still made me tired, but the nausea was better, and I wasn't getting any more strangely articulate thoughts from the direction of my stomach.
René took me to this hotel.
Eve looked around the room as though not quite seeing it.
Not this room. It wouldn't stand for anything this small. The best room in the hotel, fourth floor,
big windows, blue velvet drapes, a huge bed. I didn't ask what had happened in that bed. There was a reason she'd decided